Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Main Street Universe. Here is our opener in part. Mother, help me. Mother, heal me. Please release me from all things worldly that do not serve me. Mother, love me. Mother, help me. Mother, heal me. Please release me from all things worldly that do not serve me. Live musical performance that we do every morning here at Main Street Universe, the show reminding you that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. In the early portion of that opening riff was a chant from the song Stonehenge by Kellyanna, who will be our guest today. And I'd like for all of you to remember that every episode of Main Street Universe is recorded in our archives, which means that next week you can listen to Last Week This Week in our archive section. I would like to start off with a plug for my illustrious co-host, all the way from the Temple of Gaia.
Thank you.
Mr. Kevin Baird.
I also want to remind everybody that we now have links to all the previous shows out on our website at mainstreetuniverse.com.
All right. Yes, and that site is looking very good, and all of them are just, you just scroll down just a little bit and you can see every archive we've done, I believe.
Yep, so far, yep.
And Kevin is a psychic medium, intuitive consultant. He is also with a group called Artisans United, and they have a spring art show going on. And where is that, Kevin?
They're on Hunter Road in Annandale. You can just Google Artisans United.
All right, and he also will be contributing to that with his Paranormal Windows and Gaia Gardens. And he will be publishing his instruction book, workbook, for his Horizon Oracle, an oracle deck that he himself created. And that is being published and worked on this May, right?
It actually is out there now.
Oh, it is out there. Okay.
The publisher has it, and it's available online right now.
And I would like to also give a plug to our good friends at Sticks and Stones in Fairfax, where Kevin is, in fact, a reader, and that our guest, Kellyanna, will be doing a performance this Saturday night, May 19th, at Sticks and Stones. I, myself, will as well be doing a performance, but across town a little bit at the Accotink Unitarian Church in Burke, Virginia, and I'm hoping to finish it in time to swing back and maybe check out Kelly's performance at Sticks and Stones. We'll see how that all works out in the crazy life. Don't forget to check out Dr. Zoe Hieronymus, a friend of ours, www.zoharaonline.com. She has written a book called Sanctuary of the Divine Presence. And that's www.zoharaonline.com, as well as Esoterica, our friend Lily, who's been on the show before. Right now it's online only, but soon and hopefully to be brick and mortar again. Still, New Age Interfaith Focus, herbs, crystals, stones, oils, candles, incense, divination tools, and more. It's www.esotericanova.com in Sterling, Virginia, 703-777-4642. And I would like to say hello to everyone that is here and to bring on our co-hosts first, our eye in the sky, our budding astrologer, Mr. Brett Roone-Hillman. Are you there, Brett?
I am here. Good to be with you all.
Yes, thank you for joining us. And all the way close to the fighting city of Salem, Massachusetts, our fourth co-hostess, Miss Melissa DiGenova. Are you there, Melissa?
I am. Good morning, everyone.
And good morning. And is our guest here, Miss Kellyanna?
I am here, yes.
Oh, very nice to hear your voice. And as I was listening to it this morning, trying to transpose your song.
Hey, I've never heard Stonehenge done with the guitar. I thought that was beautiful. Well done.
Oh, thank you.
I liked it. Yeah, I liked it.
Very much appreciate it. I try to make it my own a little, but still being yours, right?
No, it's gorgeous. I loved it. And great voice, too. I didn't know what to expect, but the guitar sounded fabulous.
Awesome. I'm glad you appreciated it. And I will be hopefully checking out your show at Sticks and Stones this coming up Saturday. I'm an opening act for another band called Woven Green at Akatink. And it's an early show, and looking at their picture, they look like they're about 12. I was like, who are these
kids? Really?
So I think they have to be in early.
Kellyanna, this is Kevin. If you have a video of you performing on stage somewhere, we'd be glad to put it up on our YouTube Cafe Fairfax channel if you're interested.
There's all kinds of videos out there on YouTube. I don't know if you can attach them. There's one I played a live set at Sirius Rising last year that it's a whole set worth, so there's some really good clips on there. I'm singing with Kenny Klein. Like, we did a killer John Barleycorn on that video, I think.
Oh, that's cool. I love that song.
I don't have any of my own videos. Everybody else just puts up all these cool videos, so I've never posted a video in my life.
Of YouTube performances, I imagine. I've seen them out there. So.
Well, we could probably set it up where we do a recording at Styx if you're interested.
Sure.
If you brought a camera, maybe.
Or we could.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't have a camera. I don't even own a video camera. Like I said, I've never posted a video of myself in my life. There seem to be dozens of them on YouTube, but I haven't put one up myself.
Yeah. That's, in fact, most of mine that I've ever had, with the exception of like two, somebody else recorded somewhere.
Oh, yeah. I've had to stop letting people record my shows, actually. There's some website up in Canada that's been pirating bootleg stuff off of YouTube and, like, selling it. And I'm trying to track this thing down. And actually, I have an entertainment lawyer who's looking into it, because it's not the first time he's heard complaints about it. So I got to be careful about people recording my shows now. So I ask, you know, I try to not let just random people record my stuff.
And we'll get to that after my brief monologue here, because we'll talk a little about the music business and different things like that, because I certainly understand some of those angles and arguments.
Mm.
And we're going to talk a little bit in this monologue about the importance of art in education, because there's been a few stories recently I've been hearing. So there are those among us who actually do not value art as something as needed in our educational system. It is embarrassing for me to say that as a former political activist for almost 10 years that I have met people who think this way. And art programs in public schools are almost the first ones to get cut. National Endowment for the Arts, some information I got from them, budget cuts affecting arts programs are often heavily concentrated in poor areas as well. In Los Angeles County, $18 million in state budget cuts are causing public schools to fire teachers, stop ordering books, and increase class sizes. And of course, the first programs, as I said, on the chopping block are usually music and art classes. Teachers across the United States of America are buying art supplies with their own money to sometimes incorporate or integrate art into another lesson, in this being because artistic tools help children to learn, or adults to learn for that matter. When you engage more senses and have a sense of creative participation, this acts as a stimulant for the learning process. And I think it is truly a shame that we are in this country denying our future generations of what I see as a birthright. And yes, I do believe the issue is that serious. Artistic learning is part of the creative process and as well part of problem solving. So let us look specifically at music. I will quote an interview from Fox News. That's right, I said Fox News. This is a quote from neuroscientist Nina Krause. Experience with music appears to help with many other things in life, potentially transforming or transferring to activities like reading and picking up nuances in tones of voices, hearing sounds and noisy classroom chatter, which helps you to learn and pick things out. She goes on later to discuss how having experience with learning music can help people who are learning a foreign language, especially if that language is a tonal language. And an example of this would be, say, of a tonal vowel is in Vietnamese. Many of us have had the pleasure of eating the Vietnamese soup known as pho. I call it pho. Some say pho. And I love it, by the way. I've been told by a Vietnamese friend of mine that the proper pronunciation is pho with an ascending A. This language is both tonal and alphabetical. There has been research done as well as promoting the idea that music can help enhance your mathematics skills. The way a neuroscientist may look at this is like this. We'll operate under the scientific principle of two types of reasoning, spatial temporal or language analytical. Spatial temporal is the ability to detect and visualize patterns and to mentally manipulate them over a time-ordered sequence of spatial transformations. A champion chess player is a good example of one skilled in spatial temporal reasoning, or a good drummer. Language analytical is solving equations and obtaining a quantitative result with the information that is right there. In the studying of the effects of music on the brain, the conclusions have been reached that music does have a profoundly positive effect in stimulating our use of spatial temporal reasoning. This form of reasoning is proven useful in mathematical thinking. This has become known in some scientific circles as the Mozart effect, and perhaps you've all heard of that. Even the skeptics of the Mozart effect admit that the learning of music does enhance our capacity for spatial temporal reasoning. They just do not go as far as to say that music actually makes us smarter or better mathematicians. But even the skeptics say that it does have a profoundly positive impact on that form of reasoning. So anyway, our guest today probably does not need fancy scientific experiments to know the importance of music in hers or all of ours lives. And that will take us now to Kellyanne. And
this is a great topic for me because I was fortunate enough to be in a grade and high school that concentrated on the arts and music. I started playing music and singing in choir when I was in second grade.
Oh,
the music program was amazing in my school in central Massachusetts in Westminster. It was Westminster Elementary School and Oakmont Regional High School. And I believe, honestly, firmly believe that I don't think I would be doing what I'm doing today if I had not had that kind of access to education in music. I believe it defined my life, being able to play music from second grade until my senior year in high school. And my great niece actually went to the grade school, and the music director was a kid that I went to school with, and he invited me in as a guest for this summer concert 2 years ago, and I got to sing with my niece's choir back at my old elementary school, which was so much. I can't even tell you how much fun it was to go back to my grade school and sing with the second to fifth graders, you know? It was just fabulous.
Yeah.
But I think that I'm sure it defined my life and gave me all the skills I needed to become a professional musician now. And the fact that all these years later, my niece is able to benefit from the same program. And I said it at the concert at the grade school. I said I had to give props to the teachers and the parents and the school system that was still willing in these times to support music at the grade school level. I think that's fantastic. And as you said, so many schools have cut that stuff out of their budget, first things first. But these schools in the central Massachusetts where I went are still really finding the arts and music very important. And I think that's fabulous and way too rare. Far too rare, I think.
Because I mentioned that it's happening worse in poorer communities, which is true, which is usually the case, right? But it's still across the board. Even in fairly well-to-do places like where I'm from in Maryland, it's talked about every time there's a budget cut. They still like, well, we got to slash the music. You know, it's the first thing it's almost always the first thing to go.
Sure.
And Melissa, are you there?
Yes, I am.
And our co-host is Melissa, I believe, has some questions for you. Go ahead, Melissa.
Sure.
Hi, Melissa. We actually met a while ago at the Salem Witches Ball when I was with the Young Witches Project.
Oh, I remember meeting all the young witches. How are you?
Good. I was wondering, you actually teach music, don't you, with your spirit song classes? And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's not so much teaching music. It's they're vocal healing workshops that I do. So it's more about people finding their voice and claiming and owning their voice and using it to express and to release, you know, emotion and illness kind of thing. And I do facilitate and teach some chant circles and things. But, other than, you know, having my musical background of I played flute in the band till I was about 13, and then I was always in choir, and that's about the extent of my own personal musical training. I don't know how to read music. I forgot that language. I don't know how to write music. I forgot that language. But I think I do a lot by emotion and passion and by ear. But the vocal healing is all about people claiming their voice and expressing.
Your music does seem to have a very primal, very instinctual feel, and I wonder if that has to do with you not being able to read music.
Probably. I always say I just don't know what I'm doing. I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. But it all seems to work just fine, so I'll just keep doing it, you know? But, yeah, it's all done through heart and passion and emotion and feeling and experience, you know? And it seems to be working for me, so I'll just keep doing it this way.
Do you incorporate music into your own ritual work and worship?
100%. I created a ritual chant series where we're doing a ritual for the Wheel of the Year in different places. I do these, and the rituals are done solely with chanting. So all the energy is raised, focused, and sent off by using chant. Specific elemental chants and seasonal chants and things like that. Those are powerful. It's some of the most powerful energy I've ever worked with as far as for manifesting. You get a group of people together singing as one voice in community, and there is zero negativity, zero toxicity in that energy. It's joyful, really clean energy, and therefore it's really fabulous energy for manifesting intention. So the most powerful energy I've ever worked with in circle is this energy we raise as a group singing together. Very powerful. I'll be doing one of those chant circles Friday night, actually, in Frederick, Maryland at the Owl Nest. We're going to be doing a Beltane ritual chant circle in Frederick.
It's interesting because there's so much of a focus in ritual on the visualization, and something that has come up a great deal on this show is what happens when you have difficulty with visualization. What happens when you fall into the verbal spectrum instead of the spatial reasoning spectrum. And chanting seems to be a very great alternative for people who struggle with that portion.
Absolutely. It's completely, well, people, chanting's very primal, I think. And to join your voice to your group and become one voice creates such a powerful unity that I've found, you know, unique. And everybody can jump in and do a simple chant. And if you start chanting the same thing over and over again, it's going to alter your consciousness. You're going to start to go a little bit deeper no matter what. You know, so it really helps people who might have a hard time focusing and going into trance and going into that altered state where magic happens. It becomes a really good tool for those people. Like me, I'm not a person who can sit and meditate. I'm 44 years old. I realized long ago it's just not going to happen. I cannot sit and meditate. But I'm great with moving meditation, and drumming helps me to meditate and to really focus, and chanting. So that's how I find it works for me. And there's a lot of people out there that are like me that can't sit and do a meditation. And guided meditation, I mean, gosh, Pisces, I'm daydreaming through the whole guided meditation. I'm hardly paying attention. You know, I have a hard time with that kind of focus. So when I drum, when I chant, I can really focus and really get down into that deeper place, you know, just going down deeper into the trance and the magic place. So I find, and I've had a lot of response from people who've done ritual in the past who haven't had good luck really sinking into the ritual, but with the chant circles and the chant rituals have had tremendous, tremendous luck and a success at getting into a trance state.
I would like
primal
to add,
on it. Yes?
I just want to add briefly that I also like a lot harmony. So when people do a chant, I saw one time it was in an older Selena Fox video on YouTube, and there was this one brief portion where they were all in the circle and they were all doing it, but each one was kind of harmonizing on a different note, you know, because there was men and women there with all different pitches. Mm-hmm. And there was something about when that all becomes the one great note. It's just a great moment to me.
Absolutely. Now, it's very powerful to get a group of people singing together, singing to the god and goddess, singing to the seasons. I mean, it is some of the most amazingly powerful energy I've ever experienced in ritual. And I love leading the... I'm sorry, go ahead.
And you've had the opportunity to do this with some very large groups as well with all of the festivals you've traveled to, yes?
Yeah. I've done groups from 5 people to, 50 people. I mean, and they are powerful. Blow the roof right off. I mean, it's really powerful stuff. Yeah, that's when I do a festival. I'll go and do a performance or two, and I'll teach a workshop. And I always do, like, one of the chant ritual chant circles, because they're... It's a very great way to bring people together in a really joyful celebration kind of a setting. I love it. And they're fun, you know. It's not all theatrical and planned out. I don't ever plan a chant circle. I kind of have a gist of what I'm going to do, but I get in the circle with the people and I choose the chances we're going. I haven't scripted that in any way other than a general idea of what I want to do with the ritual. And then I just choose the chances we're going along as what I think the group will like and how the energy's going. So they're very unscripted, very much organic, the way that they unfold.
Now, is there a difference? I imagine that there's a bit of a challenge going through that format with chanting and then putting together a CD. And you just had a CD come out recently. And
right.
I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about how you take that primal process and put it in something that needs to be planned and structured and organized, such as a CD.
Once again, I'm not much of a planner. I do things very organic. I just kind of like to let them unfold how they're going to unfold. And lots of times I'll have a bait, like on my Elemental CD, which was my new CD that just came out on April 25th is called The Ancient Ones. And the one prior to that that came out in 2010 is Elemental. And Elemental is a collection of 13 ceremonial chants, basically. So what I do is I put the base chant down, And then I usually will take that bass chant, stick it on a CD, put it in my car, and drive around with it for a few months. And as I'm driving around listening to the chant, I'm writing all the parts and harmonies that you ultimately will hear on my CDs. Those things evolve over time. And I got this wonderful thing that my husband bought me is a loop pedal, and I can do this at home. I set up my studio, and I can put a bass chant down, and then I can just throw harmonies and things on top of it right there in the moment. And that's how I wrote the title track of my new album, The Ancient Ones. I wrote that in my studio, staring out the window at some snow coming down, and ended up with an amazingly primal and very deep chant that came out of that. And then basically I go into the studio and I start singing this chant, and, you know, about 30 seconds into it, I'm already trancing out really pretty hardcore. So I spent about 3.5 hours in the vocal booth crafting that Ancient Ones chant, which is, to me, it's a really powerful chant. Powerful like Stonehenge is powerful, you know. It's really a really powerful crafting of, you know, parts and vocals and things. It's fun. I love it. It's one of my favorite things to do, is to craft a chant and to record all kinds of harmonies and parts and rounds on top of it.
I have a question I'd like to add. Is there a chant or possibly a song that really sticks in your mind as kind of a moment where, you know, this is, you realize kind of, not necessarily realize, but you knew this is what you were meant to do, these kind of things? Was there something that just sticks out in your mind? Maybe it's a chant to, like, the gods or something, or just something specific. Because another big thing on our show is finding your niche, and that's another big part of the show.
You opened with my Stonehenge chant, and that chant was written, I was in a private ceremony inside the stones of Stonehenge. We had private access with the group. I went in 2003 with Shauna Carroll. We were going to perform at the Goddess Conference in Glastonbury, England, and we had a group with us, and Shauna Carroll took us into Stonehenge for private access, and we did a ceremony there.
Mm.
And at the time, I had been playing music my whole life, and I had a band that I was trying to get off the ground and write some music with, and it was me and four guys. It was going absolutely nowhere. And I remember just being really exhausted and thinking at that time that maybe it was time to give up music and just go ahead and go work in an office. And, you know, so I was kind of asking the goddess where to go next. You know, what was I going to be doing next? And I wrote the chant Stonehenge while in that meditation inside of stones. And when I got, you know, the next day we went to the Goddess Conference, and there were women there that were singing and chanting to the goddess. And it was like this, you know, big light bulb as bright as the sun went over my head. And I said, oh, here it is. This is what I need to do with my music. I need to marry my spirituality and my musical career into one. And that just set my career right off. I went home from England, and I recorded my Lady Moon album in about 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent it back to England before the end of the year. And for the next conference, I was booked as a showcase with that new album. So that, I mean, it was an instant manifestation. And, I mean, I'm four albums into it, and I've been all over the world and back doing it, you know. So that was my pivotal moment. That chant, Stonehenge, was a medicine song that I wrote for myself. I need some guidance, and I knew that things weren't working for me, and I wanted to shed the visible and invisible bonds that were holding me back from really succeeding in my music. And that's why I wrote Stonehenge. So that was that was the hour that changed my life and changed my focus and showed me where I needed to go, that I was already pretty much on the path. I just needed to seize it. And when I went home, I had 9 tracks on my Lady Moon album, which was my first. I had 7 of 9 songs already written for Ritual, you know. So I just went home and recorded those, and I wrote 2 more while I was in the studio. I wrote Morgana, and I wrote Maiden Mother Crone, and I put those 2 on. So I had a 9-track album that was like a purging for me. It all happened so fast. It just came out of me just like a purge, and that set my career up. But it was definitely Stonehenge. And that 1 hour, my first trip to Stonehenge, the stones and the song, that really did it for me.
And so maybe I did pick the right song to do this morning accidentally, because
absolutely,
it was a song that, that, since I've been thinking of launching back into doing all my artistic things for a living, which I'm not right now, I'm doing my artistic things, but I'm not doing them for just that, for a living, if you know what I mean. I still have a day job.
Sure.
But I'm making that change, and I picked the song this morning that was the one that helped you make that change and to change your life.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's really good for people to break the chains that bind. I mean, there's those things that are wrapped around us that hold us back, be it fear or finance or whatever it might be. And some of those are just superfluous. You really don't need them. So I was really wanted to speak to those unseen things that were holding me back from really succeeding in music, because I knew there was something. And obviously it was the genre. I was singing blues and rock, you know, and I needed to go and do the music to the goddess, because that's where it was at for me. And what a great time in my life to just dive into the pagan music scene, because there wasn't, you know, a whole lot happening. So it was really easy to make myself known within the genre when I started back in 2003. It's been almost 10 years now, and I've got 4 albums going. People are singing my chants at, you know, fire circles and rituals all over the world, and it pleases me to no end that my songs are and chants are becoming somewhat standards. I love that. I think it's fabulous.
That brings me to another question. Sorry, Melissa, I'll be quick. Do you notice a difference with people who are kind of newcomers to your music as opposed to people that have been listening to your music from the beginning when they talk to you? Do you notice a difference in, like, favorite songs or anything like that? Or
everybody has their own favorite. I mean, it's kind of across the board, the different songs that people... I mean, being pagan and being on this path for, I don't know, 23 years now, I know it speaks to me as a pagan. And so I guess I just choose the things that are meaningful to me. And then in the greater pagan community, I mean, people just get it. They understand exactly what I'm talking about and where I'm coming from. And then so they can pick and choose whether their thing is Greek mythology or whether they like the primal chanting. Everybody has something different that really speaks to them. So I think my music all around across the board and the different styles that I do, there's something out there that can speak to any pagan person, you know.
Full Height of Our Power has been my pump-up song. That is my Eye of the Tiger.
Yeah, that's Shauna Carroll. Shauna Carroll wrote that chant, actually. And first time I ever heard it was in Glastonbury, England. We were on top of the tour at the end of the Goddess Conference doing our fruit feast and ceremony, and they were chanting this amazing chant. And on the way back from the tour, I was with Shauna Carroll and her husband Tom, and I was trying to remember the words of that chant I had heard up on the tour. And Shauna's in the front seat, and I'm writing them down, and she's feeding me the words as we're driving along. And I said, Shauna, you know that chant? She goes, well, yeah, I wrote it. I said, well, how come I had to come all the way to England to learn it? You know, but I decided to do that chant because it's such a powerful anthem for pagans and empowering. And we were doing... On the way home from Salem Witches Ball, I was with my friends, the Dragon Ritual Drummers, out of Niagara Falls, Ontario. Mm-hmm. And I hijacked them into the studio on a Sunday morning at like 11 o'clock on the way back to Canada. I called my engineer and said, we're getting a box of Joe and we're coming through. So I brought those guys into the studio with me, and they played the drums on the recorded version of Full Height of Our Power. So that's a really... beautiful and powerful collective effort between myself and the Dragon Ritual Drummers. And that chant had made a good round at the Occupy camps last summer. I guess it was going around quite a bit at a lot of the Occupy camps.
Mm.
So it is a really amazing, empowering chant. That one isn't particularly, you know, that song, that chant could go for anybody. You don't have to be pagan to really feel the power of that chant. Any group or community could claim that chant as an anthem and an empowering song.
Which brings me to a question about a recent controversy about the misappropriation and use of chants. When is it appropriate to use someone else's chant? And how do you have to respect their intention of the original chant? And I'm talking about the Budapest's issue with We All Come From the Goddess and being very specific about what she believes is an acceptable use of that chant. And I was wondering if you'd like to weigh in on that at all.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Or how, what do you believe is acceptable use of your own music in ritual circumstance or in other circumstances?
That one's been out there so long. I mean, you mean the alterations that have come about for We All Come From the Goddess, the different lyrics and things that people have done? Is that what
that,
you mean?
Her specification about when it should be used, yeah, basically, whether it should be altered or not.
Well, for me, okay, I'll just speak for myself. I put the chant CD together, Elemental, because my fans and the people I was chanting with wanted that. And I put those chants out there. They're a collection of chants that I've written and chants that some other friends have written that gave me permission. If people are going to take those chants and use them in their ceremonies and rituals, that pleases me because that's why I put them out there. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like I need to go and monitor where they're being used and how they're being used. And if somebody wants to sing Aphrodite and Pan at Beltane and I wrote it for Midsummer, I mean, that doesn't matter to me. I put the stuff out there so that people can use it in their ceremonies and rituals. You know, there's a difference between people stealing my stuff and making recordings of them and altering them that way. I mean, that's different. That I would have to be very upset about. But the stuff that's being used in ceremony and ritual and gatherings, let it fly, you know? I think that's why I put this stuff out there. I didn't put it out there so that I could jealously hoard it against my chest. I put it out there so the pagan community could use these chants for their rituals and ceremonies as part of empowerment and for unity and to bring things into a cohesive place. And that's what the chants do. So I guess if somebody had taken one of my chants, like I Walk With the Goddess, and changed the words to it and the intention and made it into something else, that would probably bother me. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I'd feel about that, but to take the chance how they're written and to teach them and share them and use them, I mean, that really pleases me. I get emails from all over the globe about the chant, I Walk With the Goddess. It's like a pagan anthem, and people are using it from Mexico to Denmark to Australia, I mean, Austria. I'm just getting emails from everywhere about that chant being very empowering and helping to bring communities together in ritual, and that just really pleases me. I really am proud and happy that people are taking the chants and using them in their work.
And, yeah, I think it is, it's got to be a really great feeling to see something that you've given birth to. Like, it's got to be a really powerful feeling of something you've given birth to, other people using in the way that you described or in the approved way that you described. It's not like if they're taking it, recording it, and selling it. They're just using
right.
it in a performance matter, in a ritual. So I would, me personally as a songwriter, I would be extremely complimented and feel great about that and probably the shivers up the spine and everything else if I was at a pagan festival and somebody's chanting my thing, you know. To me, that would just
be... Oh, it's incredible. I'm hearing it more and more and more, you know, that the Goddess Conference in Glastonbury, I've played there a half a dozen times, but some of my chants have become integral into their conference. Even when I'm not there, I'm there. And I feel it. I feel it. Those women are walking around the landscape of Avalon singing my chants, and I feel so connected. I feel like I'm right there with it. Now, my boyfriend rewrote some of the lyrics to I Walk With the Goddess, which, you know, I really would hate for it to get out to the public because he walks around the kitchen singing, I gawk at your bodice that gawks at me, you know? Stop. You don't want that stuff getting out.
Yes.
Not something you want getting out in the public, but
yeah, right.
there's a lot of people that think that I Walk With the Goddess is a traditional. I was on Amazon.com just reading some of the comments to some of the tracks, and someone had written, I love this traditional pagan chant, but I think I enjoyed Kellyanna's version the best, and I thought that was hysterical. I had to put a comment. I'm like, thank you so much for the comment, but I have to let you know that I actually did write this chant.
That's like a double, triple,
really
quadruple
funny.
Compliment.
It really is. People already think that that's a standard, and it's only been out there, you know, 6 or 7 years, so oh, that's an ultimate compliment for me. But I can't speak for Azeeb Budapest and how she feels about it. If she wrote the chant for the goddess and it's been taken and written with some god words, then I guess I could understand how she feels. You know? I personally, you know, wouldn't want my stuff rewritten without permission. Does that make
sense?
Yeah,
I've heard that she actually put a curse on the song. don't
know how I heard that, too. Yeah, it's not my way of going about things. I suppose she can handle it however she wants. I'd be a lot more philosophical and forgiving about that, I think, my personality, you know. Because things are going to morph. And if they get out there long enough after years and years and years, you know, things can happen.
Okay, and we're going to... Go ahead, Melissa.
It makes me think of the old-time religion chant, which
yeah.
I think back to the Salem Witch's Ball has several thousand verses, it seems, written, parodied about every single different pagan and some about the flying spaghetti monster. Now, and that was originally a Christian song.
Was it? Well, I know Doug Green was singing one, and they wrote me into it last year at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Were you there for
that
one, Doug?
I was there for that.
Well, it was just that's just fun. You know, if somebody wants to do that, that's just fun stuff. I don't know. I thought it was really funny. I don't mind my stuff being shared. People can, you know. Yeah, but I gawk at your bodice gawks at me. I really don't want that one getting out there. Sorry, honey.
Why do you keep saying it on the air then?
Because I think it's so funny, because now people are going to have earworms. They're going to be, I gawk at your bodice. No, go ahead.
Right.
You know?
It's like, don't practice certain things, saying them wrong, or, you know, you'll pick them up. It's like a kid,
so I hope
a
I get
child
a bunch
when
of
you say the wrong word.
People are going to be like, oh, boy, you should have never said that. I've been singing I Gawk at Your Bodice all day. That's okay.
But don't blame us. I haven't said it once.
No.
You're the one saying it on our show.
I'm doing it on purpose, actually, yeah, because like I said, it's an earworm. I'm hoping it will get into start tormenting some people. They'll be like all day going with it. No, I'm just teasing. Like
no,
I said, I'm pretty
casual. Press is bad press, huh?
Pretty casual about that stuff. I don't get too upset about it. The music's out there. It's got feet. It's going to walk the world all on its own now, and it's going to travel. You know, and that's just what happens when you put music out there, and you have to expect that that's going to happen. You know?
I agree. And Kellyanna, we're going to take a brief pause here just to go to our Eye in the Sky segment. Brett Hillman, our resident astrologer. Are you there, Brett?
I'm here, and I am ready.
All right, go ahead.
Well, not much is happening right about now, but this week, later on, the sun will move into Gemini. As we go through our travelings around the sun, I will explain a little bit about the various zodiac signs, as we've already gone through some of the other ones on our journey, and we now move to Gemini. Gemini is another air sign. We talked about Aquarius before, and like most air signs, they have a real problem with coming to a decision. The thing that's different, though, is why. For example, Aquarius will overanalyze everything, think about every possible contingency. Geminis usually find the best of a situation and the worst of a situation and and will argue between two points. They're great for seeing two sides of an issue. My 101 segment for today is on Saturn. We've been going through the planets, and we move to Saturn. Saturn is the Roman name for the Greek Titan Cronus. Cronus was the Titan that actually ate his children, which would become the Olympians, and he is also the father of Zeus. Much like Jupiter is more of a being the Roman name of Zeus, and the king of the gods, talking about the expansion of the gods, Saturn deals with constriction. It it holds you back? What are the things that keep you in place, limitations? It's our boundaries. And recently, Saturn was in retrograde, so we had a lot of fun exploring boundaries and generally getting them irritated. Saturn's also represented with authority, be that parental authority, religious authority, civil authority, teachers, those kind of things. And that's what I have for this week.
Okay. So boundaries and issues with authority, we're coming out of that or going into that?
Oh, I'm just saying that was just my saying. We've been taught, we kind of went in through it already.
Okay.
But I was just kind of giving an example of when it was being tested rather recently.
Gotcha. And Kellyanna, what we're going to do, we have one more segment. This will involve you, though, because we were going to have Kevin Baird's segment on his Horizon Oracle, and was wondering if you would like a reading from the Horizon Oracle, Kellyanna, as part of his segment.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
That sounds good.
All right. So I'm just shuffling the deck here. It's a deck of 111 cards, images that I created, a little more simplistic, lay terms, lay images kind of style, so that anybody that looks at the images can get the gist of what's trying to be conveyed.
Did you have a question or a general?
A general message, I guess.
Okay.
The first card that's up is the Things card. It shows an individual inflating a balloon with the word Things written on or printed on the side of it. And the Things card is really, and then the balloon is attached to a tank with an X that shows an individual on it. And it's really talking about some of the things that are around you being inflated beyond their capacity or beyond what's really realistic. And it's usually happening when somebody needs attention, or groups of people, or someone you've not spoke to in a while that you feel like you've been needing to get in touch with. There's some kind of buildup, some kind of like stress that's being built up as far as not having a connection with this person or not touching base with them or something. And sometimes just calling and saying, hi, how you doing, or sending a text or saying hello on their wall or something can sort of like ease the pressure. Because this pressure that is generated by the people who are connected to us influences our environment and our world and everything. And we can sort of feel the pressure in our shoulders and our neck, and it sometimes makes it impossible for us to focus. So that's just really a heads up that connect with this person.
I need to call my sister. I already know.
Okay.
I've been
so
thinking about it for 3 days, actually. Yeah.
Oh, all right, awesome. The next card that's up is associated with the time 722, and all my cards are associated with the time of the day, and that you can go to my website, templeofgaia.com, and click on the Horizon Oracle card. This one shows two individuals each holding a magnet that's drawing each other or the both of them together, and it shows trees in the background, which talks about experience and, applied understandings of situations going on in the world. And this talks about you connecting with somebody who has an equal share in what's going on in the world, and that you guys both have the same kind of track record, and that it could segue into something that would be very beneficial. The other thing is that I just drew the Rituals card, and it's associated with the time 11:30. And this card came out upside down. And when the cards are facing away from you or are upside down, that's a message that we are to assist the people with something, or assist the people who are in our lives and the situations that are in our lives, assist them with trying to complete whatever the message is that's on the card. And this card, again, is the 11:30 card, and it's the Rituals card, and it shows an individual working with a pestle and the grinder thing, you know, I forget, it escapes me.
Mortar.
Right now. Go ahead.
Mortar and pestle?
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
This talks about helping people find their ritual space. And I think your music is really helpful in that. It's almost like your music is a tonic, and it helps them sort of like relieve the pressures that are affecting their world. So I don't know if you're working on any kind of new ideas in your studio or something, but, you know, we got the solstice coming up, and maybe a solstice ritual chant song or something might be in order, that it could just really transform people, because people are in the mood right now, because I just drew the risk card, and it's associated with the time 8:43. People are in the mood for taking risks because they're waiting on the world to do something for them, to make things happen in their world. And now they know that the world is somewhere else, or, you know, Googling somebody or on Facebook and not really paying attention to them. So they got to get up, get out of the house, and start doing something. The world isn't going to come to them anymore. And I think that your music can help them with that. And that's what I have for you.
Hey, thank you. That's wonderful. Do you have your cards at Sticks and Stones? Will I be able to look at them?
Yes.
Oh, great. Great.
And when are you going to be at Sticks and Stones again? Just plug it one more time.
Saturday night. The time I should know, I looked in my calendar and don't have it written down, but I think it's like 6 to 9. I think I'm doing like a meet and greet from 6 to 7, and then the concert will be, you know, like an hour and a half, probably 7 to 8:30 with CD sales and stuff. But I'm thinking about like 6 to 9. I'll definitely be there at 6 to do some meet and greet and find CDs and just talk to people and get to meet people before the show.
If you're on Facebook later on, we just added you to our Main Street Universe group wall, and go ahead and post an event there. And just
okay.
That word out to everybody so we know what time and the things that you're
sure.
looking forward to.
Yeah. I'd like to put the chant circle up that's going to be happening Friday night. We're doing a Haven chant circle at the Owl Nest in Frederick, so I'll definitely put that up there too.
Okay. Feel free.
Awesome.
Great.
Thank you for being here with us today, by the way.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm very pleased that you asked me to do this, and I hope that people will check out my music and check out my brand new CD that just came out a couple weeks ago and seems to be doing very well. It's a little different stylistically for me. I've got some, like, I have one song that's like a 6.5-minute girl jam band kind of thing that's really cool with a couple really powerful chants. So I'd like
to
check that out.
We have a lot of budding artists that listen to our show and the archives and that kind of stuff. What advice can you give to them? Because, you know, sometimes people get discouraged when they're working on their stuff. It's like, why am I doing this? What advice can you give them?
You have to persevere. You have to be really, really, really stubborn and just really forge ahead. Don't let the obstacles hold you back. You have to push past them.
So stay connected to your passion. And ignore
stay
everything.
Stay connected to your passion and the intention of what you're doing, and don't let the obstacles in the road and the hiccups discourage you, because each one that you get past will make you that much stronger and takes you that much closer to your goal. So I'm just saying determination, real determination, and persistence. You have to be persistent. And just follow your heart and led me here, and I'm glad that I followed it, because I was a businesswoman, and if I would have stayed in business, I would not be right here right now talking to you all.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad I ignored it and chucked it. I decided to be a pagan musician instead.
We're all glad you did as well.
Those people were talking about your chant and how you inspired them. You know, it's like, I like Kellyanna's chant version of this a lot better. Who inspired you? Who got you to where you are today? Like, whose song plays over and over again in that mind to media player in your mind when you're thinking about composing something?
Two women in my life really helped to inspire me to do the chanting that I'm doing. One is Shauna Carroll, who has a CD that came out in 2000 called Goddess Chant, which is just a beautiful, beautiful CD of chant. And that was my first like introduction to like song chant. I had done ritual chant, like Kona Power chants and chants for ritual, but that was the first like musical CD I had ever heard dedicated to chant. And then in 2002, I met a woman named by the name of Jonna Runnels, and she's from Glastonbury, England, who does really powerful chant. So those were two were huge influence in me, and actually having the courage to put out the chant and stuff the way I felt and heard it inside of myself. So those were two of my real major influences.
That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that.
Okay. And now I have a series of questions I wanted to ask you.
Sure.
Eliana. One was, I noticed on your marquees, or I noticed on your website at your future, that was an incoming call that didn't happen, I think. Are you still there?
Okay. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, good. It happens sometimes when somebody tries to call here. It'll be a little glitch. There's almost, and it's about to happen again, I noticed that there's almost no nightclubs or bars or those kinds of things that you're playing at. They're all festivals, new age stores, and little shops and things like that. Have you sort of fed up with the trying to do music through the club circuit?
I did. I played in a rock band and an acoustic duo and trio for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I started playing in the bars in 1990, and when I started doing my pagan music, I just really lost the taste. In the wintertime, I have a trio that I've been playing with for like 18 years called Moonstruck. It's me and my friend Heidi Joe and our friend Captain, who plays guitar. And I'll do 3 or 4 shows with them at our local Irish pub in my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I do not go for bars and that kind of stuff anymore at all. My venues are definitely the festivals, the shops that are dedicated and geared towards the pagans. I have no desire to do the bar rooms, really. It lost its charm for me about 10 years ago.
Me too.
Yeah.
I still do sometimes, like you said. Even though I don't believe in hell, if there was one, there would be a special place for the club owner.
Yeah, there's a whole different brand of crazy going on there. My cover gigs are so fun that I do with my friends, because we're doing like Led Zeppelin covers, and we're doing like Stevie Nicks and Neil Young. We're doing all classic rock. And I go there with no guitar. I've got 2 guitar players, and I just get to sing my butt off, and it is so much fun. I mean, I don't normally get into doing the cover shows anymore, but with them, it's about being with my friends and having fun playing like good old Led Zeppelin. I mean, you just can't get any better than that. So,
mm-hmm.
But I do gear away from them. I just don't find that environment comfortable for me anymore, the bars and that kind of thing.
It's actually a pretty terrible market. When you play the, people always say, oh, go learn a bunch of cover songs and go play in the local bar. I mean, it's okay, but it's an awful market. At the end of the night, you're always debating with the nightclub owner. He's like, well, how much do I owe you? And you're like, hey, I got an idea. How about the amount we agreed on?
Yeah, right? Are you going to deduct from my chicken plate? Oh, thank you very much.
I was talking to one musician recently who was telling me about the bag of, speaking of something that should teach in public schools, you carry with you a bag of plastic army men, and then you can clog the toilets of the nightclub up and say, you can pay me or you can pay the plumber. The plumber's not bringing anybody in.
I made my living for 15 years doing those cover gigs. I did. I mean, we played 12 to 16 shows a month for 10 years with my duo. We were hardcore all over central Massachusetts and into Maine and New England, into Cape Cod and the Vineyard. I mean, we raged all around New England, and it was great, you know, but I'm really glad to be looking behind at it now, saying it's in the past, you know. It doesn't have the same appeal. But it's also great. I learned all my chops. You know, I learned how to deal in a business way with people, and every single gig was an experience that brought me to where I am today. So I needed that education and that experience in dealing with, you know, money at the end of the night and dealing with negotiating with owners and even festival people, you know. It's a whole art form in itself.
Will that ever change? Will the nightclub owner ever just come up to you and give you the money you're supposed to agree on at the beginning of the
night?
Yeah,
it does happen. It does happen, ultimately, sure.
But I'd like to go back to Melissa. Did you have any more questions?
I was wondering if you had any recent stories with your travels with the festivals that you wanted to go into. There's a lot of us who are very rooted in where we are and dream about traveling around the country and going to all of these amazing festivals. And were there any experiences that struck you recently?
Good question.
There's my first festival of the year was this year at Beltane, and I went to Triangle, Virginia, and did the Fertile Ground Gathering, which is put on by the Shadow Grove Ministries out of Virginia. And this is my second year at that festival. It's a I enjoy the smaller festivals myself, 100, 150 people. I find them very intimate and beautiful as opposed to the bigger festivals. So my first festival was at the Fertile Ground Gathering. It's 150 people in the woods of Virginia. It is such a fantastic gathering. It's people that come together, and the 150 of us that gather become a community, really tight, tight community for 4 days. And I was really blessed this year that my good friend Jenna Green came down from Rhode Island, and that Christopher LaFond, a harpist from Massachusetts, came down. So it was like the New England contingency was doing the music there. And we met up with a band called Dragon Song, who out of Virginia. So it's a beautiful, beautiful festival of community. You know, I really love that small festival. And the weather was just atrocious, and the ticks were horrible, but it was just a big love, love, love fest. We were so happy to get together. So that was my first festival of the year. My next festival will be, I'll be doing Summer Solstice at Wisteria in Pomeroy, Ohio. That'll be my next festival that I'm doing. So, and then I do the New York Fairy Festival, and then I go up into Ontario to do the Spirits of the Earth Festival. It's their 10th annual event, so I'm going to Canada after that. So, yeah, you got to get out there and try some festivals. There's some, you're in New England, aren't you, Melissa?
Mm-hmm. I'm stationed. I'm actually going to be moving down to the Cape very soon.
Oh, well, there's some great gatherings up there in Massachusetts. You know, you don't have to go too far. There's a Sacred World Interdependence Day that happens in Central Mass. There's Forest Dance over Labor Day. Alisa Starkweather runs the Daughters of the Earth Festival. There's Rites of Spring in Western Mass. There's some great gatherings. I'm doing one in Vermont at Lunasa the first weekend of August. That's brand new for me. I've never done. So maybe you should just get a friend and pack your car and just your tent and check out one of these great festivals up in New England up there. You don't have to go too far to find a good festival.
I plan to.
Yeah, do that. You'll enjoy it. You'll never regret it, and you'll become a festival junkie like me.
That leads me to my next question, which is, I've heard different opinions on this, including from people that do it for a living. What is your opinion of the road? Do you love the road? Do you love the tour? Sounds like you do. I'm just getting your opinion on being away from home, being on the road, the travel, the everything. Is it something you really enjoy?
I'm a homebody, you know? I'm a homebody who has to travel to make my living. So for me, it's when I'm home, you couldn't get me out of my house with a rocket launcher. I am so planted there. And I get this really kind of strange, like, hyper-anxiety that comes with preparing for a trip. And I realize for myself that I do 3 weeks on the road, and then I've got to go home for a month or so. Then I'll do another 3 weeks, and I have to kind of pop back to my home base. That's how it works for me. And I've come to this over years and years of touring. But so I get a little bit anxious about the traveling, and I'm always by myself, you know. I go to Holland by myself, England by myself. I drive to Florida by myself, Ohio, Canada. So that's a little bit of anxiety. But once I'm on the road, I mean, once the car's packed and on the passenger seat I have all my, like, CD wallet spread out so I got all my tunes ready to go, I'm a gypsy. I'm happy as can be, and I get on that gypsy road, and I'm really pleased when I'm on the road. I really, really love it. But like I said, I got to do it in, like, 3 week spurts of touring, and then I got to go back home and recharge before I go out again. And we're so blessed here in the Northeast that, I mean, I don't have to go much further than, like, Florida, Ontario, Ohio to stay busy year-round because there's so much to do out here.
And I do agree. I actually might be, even though I'm not doing it now, I truly love travel and transit, and I like being in airports, and I like just being in places where it feels like anything's possible. There's something about I definitely have that travel gypsy bug, though I haven't been doing it. Of course, if I start doing it more, as I plan to in the future, I might develop more like you. Do some spurts, come back home. Do some spurts, come back home.
Yeah. That's how it works for me. And I love it. I love it. And then when I'm out on the road, I mean, everything's an adventure. And when I first started, it was all brand new. I didn't know anybody. I was going into the unknown every single time I left my house. But now, 10 years later, I've just got communities and family just everywhere I go feels like coming home. And that took a long time to build. So now it's most every place is not unknown. I'm going to know someone everywhere I go now, you know. So I built that up over time. And I love it. I got another week on the road, and I'm pretty thrilled about it. Then I go home for a month.
and that was another aspect I was going to bring up about the travel, is the one way it would be a little bit of a bummer for me would be totally by myself like that. I mean, the camaraderie is part of the fun of being a musician, right? It's sort of, it's you and your buddies against the world. You know, you're out on the road, and that camaraderie, which I've always usually had in my musical journeys, usually had bandmates. They were actually longtime best friends. So that's one aspect I could relate to that might be a little bit of anxiety, as you said.
Yeah, I mean, I'm used to traveling by myself at this point, you know, so it's not a thing for me. And then you get nobody else's needs and wants and schedules to worry about. It's like when I have a gig and I need to be somewhere at X o'clock, I don't want to be waiting on somebody else, and I don't want somebody making me late, you know what I mean? So it works for me. I do really well with it. And like I said, every stop I make is like coming home. There's somebody there that I know that's ready to welcome me, so it's not so bad anymore. It's not all unknown. It's a great adventure of coming and popping around to my different pockets of family all over the eastern part of the country.
Mm-hmm. And that'll take it to a slightly different direction. I wanted to ask you about your history. You mentioned how long, about 23 years, your history of first coming to paganism itself. When did you first become pagan?
I stumbled upon it. My parents were both Catholics and were both excommunicated before I was born. So we really didn't have much in the way of religion and stuff going on. My grandmother was Sicilian, Roman Catholic, and the few times I went to church with her was in a beautiful chapel where they sang in Latin, and I just thought it was the most beautiful things. I loved the stained glass. I loved the smell of the incense. I loved the choir. So that was like my introduction really to any kind of organized religion, but we were just little heathens. We didn't really have anything. And in my sophomore year of high school, I had a world studies course, and it started touching upon world religions like Taoism and Buddhism, Confucianism, Native American and shamanic stuff, and a little bit upon Celtic paganism. And it was then that I realized that the mythology that I had loved and been fascinated, mythological stories, had a background, a religious background, that these myths came from beliefs. And yeah. I was really fascinated by that. And then it was only a few years later that I met my first pagan person, you know, a woman who was actually Wiccan and started out learning, you know, spell work in the past. And I fell into it, and I met that woman. I wanted to know everything. I was immediate. I said, I need to know everything. You have to tell me everything, you know, and that was when my path started. So I had really come to realize that the mythology that I loved came from some real ancient beliefs, and that just fascinated me. And that was a long haul. That's like 23 years ago now. But I think my love for mythology was what really brought me to paganism.
Go ahead, Melissa.
I can't believe that you're 44 years old. Having met you, I seriously thought you were in your 20s, just so you know.
Oh, you're sweet. Thank you. I was with Wendy Rule last week, and we did a fairy ball in Pennsylvania at Boob's Brewery, and I had my fairy wings on and got dressed, and she said I looked 15. I could have kissed her. But yes, I'm in my mid-40s, and I think I look young because I live a life that I love, and I get to do everything I want to do all the time. I think that keeps you young in life. I'm not punching a time clock and working for the man and miserable. I'm working for myself and just with joy and total glee every time I set out to do something. I think it'll keep me young and happy.
Oh, yeah. I agree. It can definitely have an impact because stress has an effect on your body, you know, an effect on you physically. And by the way, by seeing your pictures on your website, I didn't think you were of that age either. I thought you were much younger than that.
That's okay. It's amazing what a hair and makeup woman can do for you.
I like the one where you had the purple shirt. I thought that was a very nice picture.
Thank you.
And I also wanted to mention, because you mentioned church, now that you do consider yourself to be pagan, are you one of those people who's comfortable in a church? Do you feel out of place? Because let's face it, we all have Christian relatives. Some of us still go to churches for Christian holidays, even though all the people
on this show the hosts are all pagans, but you know, we all have these
yeah,
folks
no, I
in
never
our lives.
Never.
No?
I mean, I performed just last week at the Hagerstown Unitarian Universalist Church, and I find myself in Unitarian Universalist churches quite a bit. And I'm very comfortable there, you know,
mm-hmm.
very comfortable there. But I don't do much as far as Catholic ceremony and stuff like that, unless I'm, like, going to a wedding. But most of my friends are pagans, so they're hand fasting. So I really haven't, I can't even remember the last time I've been in a church, to be honest with you.
I guess
if it
wasn't
went Unitarian Universalist. Yeah. Because, like I said, my parents were a bunch of heathens. They were excommunicated, so they don't really go to church.
Okay, okay. Because I'm still one of those people, I'm not uncomfortable, really, in that environment. But I sometimes I'm just fascinated by the idea that a whole bunch of people are gathering together once a week to, you know, devote some time to something higher than themselves, even if it's not necessarily the thing I'm into.
I love the Catholic rituals as much as I love our own rituals. I mean, it's just another form of worship, and it's fascinating to me. It's
mm-hmm.
fascinating to me. You know, even just a Catholic ceremony, I think, is beautiful, has its own beauty, you know? My grandmother's funeral, when my grandmother died and we went to her funeral and we sat in this beautiful church that I had attended with her when I was a child a half a dozen times, I've never felt so at peace in my life as I was sitting there, because I knew my grandmother was a woman of such strong faith that I knew she was definitely, she was in her heaven and she was happy there. So it was a beautiful and peaceful experience the last time I was in church, and that was my grandmother's funeral, actually.
Mm.
I felt at peace. I thought it was beautiful. I enjoyed it. So, no, I don't feel like the place is going to burn down the second I walk in there or anything.
Or that you're going
to. The walls don't start to shake and crumble, you know. I think I'm a pretty person with high integrity and good faith. And, you know, no matter what you call your God, we're all spiritual people. So I think it's good. I think whatever the God is and whatever name he or she goes by, he recognizes a person of faith. You know, and of good, high integrity, so.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
And I live with two Unitarian ministers, by the way.
Yeah, well, I love Unitarian Church. If I had one closer to me, I'd be a member myself, but it's down the mountain pretty far, and their services are 9 o'clock on Sunday morning. You're never going to see me at 9 o'clock on Sunday morning. You'd never want to see me at 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning.
Not as doctored up as those pictures.
Oh, no. Wouldn't even happen.
Just playing.
No way.
And, Brett, are you still there? Hello? Okay, it's okay. Melissa, are you still there?
I am still here.
Okay. Just giving everybody a chance if you had any more questions or comments. We have about 17 minutes or so remaining in the show. I would like to say...
I have a question for Daniel.
Sure.
Daniel, have you written any of your own pagan music?
I am a songwriter, and hey, now I'm being interviewed.
I kind of tend to do stuff like that.
That's right. You turned it all around.
That's right.
That's okay. I have... A lot of my songs are very... The lyrics are sort of, I'll use the word, sort of transcendental, to where they can be related to a lot of things. And I've written a few either, you know, tradition-specific or specifically pagan songs. I would say a lot of them are a little more loose in their content than that, or they're sometimes about an issue, or they're sometimes about a social issue, or, of course, the occasional love song.
But
I'm not one of those people that writes all love songs. That's about 95% of the market already does that for us.
Right. Oh, great. Well, hopefully we'll get to be talking about one of your CDs someday.
Oh, yeah. We're working on it.
Yeah, my friend Devin. Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. That's fine.
So my friend Devin Hunter runs the Modern Witch podcast out of California, and he's a fan. He has all my CDs, and he got my last CD, and he put a comment out on Facebook of how he really likes the fact that I'm so outwardly pagan in my music. It's like I don't water it down for the masses. I mean, this is like music for pagans, you know, and I like that. I like being described as that, music for pagans, because I spent so much of my life trying to water down who I was. I was living a dual life, you know. I was like this pagan person who did all my rituals with my friends, and then I was like out there in the world as this, you know, rock singer. And I had to split myself for many years. And the time when I just claimed who I am and started just being who I am all the time, not two sides, just one. And I decided I wanted to do that in my music. I don't want to water it down. I want it to be outwardly, like, deeply pagan. And the people who are afraid of that deep pagan stuff, if they don't want the music, fine. They don't have to buy it. You know, if it's too pagan for them, that's fine. I don't mind. I don't think I could be too pagan at this point. I think I just need to keep going with my heart and soul and doing the real deeply, deeply spiritual music for the pagan people, the pagan population. I mean, if they want good, deep pagan music, it's easy to find now with the internet, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And,
well, hold on just a second. Let's take a quick second to just have the mics be quiet. Brett is trying to say something in the room. Go ahead, Brett.
Hello?
He's here again. Okay, we lost him for a minute. Go ahead, Brett. Here's your symbol.
Love my connection. I'm having technical difficulties for the last month and a half. so glad to have you with us. Thank you for, you know, taking the time to speak with us even. Just want to let you know, just before the show, I realized I did not download your newest album, so I'm one of your newest customers.
That
album.
All right. We'll get a symbol for that.
Thank you, Brett. Thank you. Winning them over one download at a time. Yahoo. Hey, Brett, let me ask you a question. A friend of mine was talking about Venus being retrograde right now.
Let me look at my notes, because I think I did write something on that.
Does that mean that
week.
Love stuff could get kind of funky right now? Our love lives, do we have to watch out?
Well, for sure, Venus is in Taurus right now, which would make it very earthy, very sensual, and it can get really awkward at points because one side might be going too strong while the other side's not quite ready, you know, that kind of thing. Which is really interesting because I'm in a new relationship myself, and actually she learned, the reason I asked about like new listeners earlier is because she is new to your music as well. You are the first pagan artist that she has been introduced to recently. Her favorite song is Autumn Wind.
Nice. And that's my least pagan song, by the way.
Yeah, but it happens.
Yeah, sure.
But let's see. I think I have it up now. I have tons and tons of notes, so I apologize. Venus is in Gemini. That was what it was. I knew it was something. Venus is in Gemini, which also would make it really awkward because, you know, the two sides of the issues, a lot of light is going to come into the picture with high and low. I don't know about retrograde, however. I can't confirm that one, but Venus in Gemini alone makes an interesting sign when complex emotions come into the picture.
Yeah.
Well, what I think in retrograde is that it's like some lovers or people from your past, because it's coming back, and especially connected with it being in Taurus right now, and that we're thinking about it while we're here in Taurus, is that there's going to be some connections from lovers from our past. They're going to say, hey, how you been? What's going on? You want to grab a Coke or dinner or something
No, that would be awful.
You know what? We're talking about our love lives, and my husband's, like, ringing in on my phone right now. His ears must be ringing.
His ears were burning.
I've been in a seven-year solid relationship, so I feel pretty good. And Venus, no matter what Venus is doing, I think we're doing really well, so... I feel pretty confident with my relationship right now.
Good.
Well, you're locked in marriage. That supersedes astrology, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so too. We're tight. Plus, we're older. We've been through the traumas and trials of bad relationships, so I think we make it much easier on one another now because we just want to get along and be happy and no arguments and smooth sailing. So we live our lives that way. I feel very blessed. Really blessed.
I miss that in my teen years, so I'm getting them in my 20s.
Awkward
phase. so I'm getting it now in full force.
Yeah, very good.
Say again.
I was going to say, do we ever really leave our awkward phases? And I think that whole clash right there is absolute proof, especially on this show, we do not.
This is what I call what is normal moments. There's no such thing as normal. It's only talked about.
Yeah, well, I think normal's boring anyway.
That's right. Seven, I remember 7 years. I thought I remember hearing, isn't that used to be an old, like, pagan's wedding? Like, it was supposed to last 7 years, and then you redo it or something like that? Maybe you haven't.
Oh, I don't
it.
Know. I don't know about that.
It's not a bad idea. Hey, if it doesn't work out...
I don't
out,
know, renewing wedding vows never seems like a bad idea, especially with your husband's ringing ears there.
Yeah, I know. If he calls in right now, isn't that crazy? This is my longest relationship. I mean, I was married in my 20s, and it didn't even last as long as my current relationship. So this is a record for me. And I don't know, we're more in love with each other, and we're closer now than we were, you know, when we first met. So I guess we're heading in a really good direction.
Well, may the gods and goddesses continue to bless it.
Thank you. I hope so, too.
My longest relationship is an hour and a half on the radio. I think that's about all people can take of me. No, just kidding. Somewhere around, I think I one time said 9 months. I don't know, something about, let's not go into that.
That's for another show altogether.
That's right, that's right.
I hope
and
that has
we
nothing
are.
To do with January 20th or I'm in trouble.
So, but Kevin, am I going to see you at Sticks and Stones on Saturday night?
I'm going to really try to be there. Kevin Baird may be there. Are you going to try to be there?
I'm going to try and be there, yep.
And I am opening up for the band Woven Green at a Unitarian church not far away. And I think I'm done my portion of it at about 7 o'clock. I mean, I'm just the opening act.
Oh, nice.
Which means...
And I think...
What, about
I
7 to 10
songs? I think the Michigan Michigan Pagan community would disown me if I did not invite you to try to come to Convocation at least once.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
When is that? When is Convocation?
February. Let me see. They actually did post their dates.
Yes, because and everybody wants to visit Michigan in February.
I know, right? It's actually not
that's
that
the place
actually
to be in February.
That
that's what you do for Florida gig, Brett.
It's the end of the month. It's starting to get warmer.
Well, it's a good thing I know how to dress for winter. That's for sure.
But
sure, I'll go anywhere. If somebody wants to bring me to Michigan for convocation, I am so there. Are you kidding me? I don't really do much in the winter. I usually take a couple months off. But I did a ResiaCon in Boston this year. So, yeah, some of the cons are fun to do, I think, in the winter months.
Apparently, I have phone calls to make.
I've never played in Michigan, actually. It's one of the states I have not traveled to perform yet is Michigan. That's one of them.
Well, we'll have to change that.
Yeah, I'd like to come out to Michigan. I have a lot of fans in Michigan, so it seems only fair.
I wrote out a form to actually teach panels this year, and if I get enough students, I'm going to end up being singing karaoke. So I invite people to come just to sing. It won't
be
as good as
karaoke.
You want.
Karaoke, love it. What's your favorite karaoke song to sing?
I don't have one. I've never done this before.
Oh, really?
You've never done karaoke before?
If I get enough students to a panel, I'm doing it.
Nice.
My favorite karaoke are the ones where no one can sing well, you know, and it's just kind of, it's kind of like a 4 hours of just torture.
Singing something like "You Light Up My Life."
We call that scaryoke.
Yes, exactly. Like the early bad parts of American Idol where, you know, you see all the people that can't sing. There's something very entertaining about that. Not that I really watch American Idol, but if you're going to watch it, that's the time.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
My parents love it. But I stayed with them for like 2 weeks, and they had Idol on, you know, when it came on. There is something, I noticed that there's something very entertaining about how vulnerable it is to stand up there
and to be a terrible singer singing in front of those people. And I think that's
why people tune in. When I stay with my parents down in Florida, they get me hooked on Dancing with the Stars all the time.
They might know each other. Do you have any Michaels in your family?
Who got eliminated? I mean, I find myself, I don't even have cable or satellite at home. I mean,
I don't watch either.
TV at home. We get a DVD player. We watch, like, series and stuff. But I'll be like, oh, my God, who got eliminated tonight? I got to call my mother to find out. Watch it on Hulu, you know?
Exactly.
It's a weird little thing.
And
yeah, but I've never seen American Idol. One time I started watching it, I found it very offensive, so I never watched it again.
It is what it is.
You know, I felt bad
it's
for the poor people who were being
That's
humiliated.
All that needs to be said.
It is that. It is a vulnerable thing to sing in front of people. I mean, it's an awkward moment. The very first time I ever did it, I mean, I was shaking. I mean, I could barely play my guitar. I was shaking so bad. I was about 17 years old playing at a youth center. What had happened is I had a female singer with me, and she got shy, and she turned her mic off and pretended like it wasn't working, so I had to sing. That's when I first started singing.
By
well,
default.
There
are professional singers that still get sick before shows, you know.
Yeah, no, I've been singing since I was a little kid. It's always been my thing. I never really approached it with any kind of fear. It was always my place of most comfort, you know, and where I felt empowered always since I was a little kid. I just always thought I was going to be a rock star. I mean, I would sing into my Barbie dolls, my hairbrushes, play air guitar with the tennis rackets. You know, I was always a rock star deep down inside for sure.
Yeah, I did. I used to pace around the yard and sing. I don't know if that's kind of odd, but I used to do that. But my first time in front of folks, I was about 17 years old. I was definitely a little nervous then, but of course now I'm used to it.
I can share a scary story. Whenever I did my first reading professionally out in public back in like 98, my first person sitting down at the table, I was scared out of my wits. It was no problem to read for friends and family,
yeah,
but to have a complete stranger sit there opened up the gate.
Yeah. And
yeah,
we're coming up.
Yeah, take that first time.
Oh, yeah. You just got to jump in. Trial by fire, just like this show. You know, we started the show back in right around Samhain, right around Halloween, I believe, this past one. So been going close to half of the wheel of the year, and it's a work in progress.
And we're getting ready to go to television soon, too, June.
That's fabulous. That's really fabulous. Good for you guys.
Yeah.
Public television.
Thank you very much. And as you can tell, there are four hosts of this show, so right now we have three people on the phone, and we keep working on, of course, trying not to interrupt. It's getting slowly better. It's getting better, and we're structuring things better. And like I say, it's a trial by fire. Just like you said, you got to just jump in.
You just jump in and do it. You learn your chops as you go along, kind of. You know,
If
you waited till everything was perfect before you presented it, you'd be probably waiting forever because you wouldn't trust yourself to go forward. So I just kind of hack my way through it all and gain my experience every time I perform and every time I teach a class.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And I was in a conversation recently about the idea of perfection. And to me, it's like I'm not really, this won't shock some of the people that know me, I'm not really a detail guy. I'm more of a, hey, I got a great idea, and let's go. You know, that's me. That's my nature. I'm not going to go, well, this isn't perfect. I can't go forward with this. Paragraph four is, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Not for the lawyers.
Yeah, the Virgos of the world. I don't – just kidding. But some of them, not all of them. But I just – you know, I believe in experience, and that experience is where you learn, and that nothing – it's not going to be perfect anyway, so you might as well just – you know, shoot from the hip every once in a while. Just charge forward and do it.
And I say,
I'm not a perfectionist.
Come up with your own.
Go ahead, Kellyanna.
I said, I'm not a perfectionist either. I'm a realist. I'm human. You know, I make mistakes. I forget my own words. I crunch a chord every once in a while. You know, I gave up on being a perfectionist a long time ago. And I just it's just real. We're human beings. We're real. You know, so I can't approach it with perfectionism. It's just not my nature.
I agree. And Kellyanna, we're coming down to about 6 seconds. So we're going to be ending right here. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Good show.
All right. And thank you, Brett Hillman.
You are very welcome.
Thank you, Melissa DeGenova.
You are welcome. I'll see you next week.
All right. See you next week. Thank you, Kevin Baird.
Yep. And find us on the Main Street Universe group wall.
And remember that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. Blessed be everyone.